Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, offering a master's program in social work that combines rigorous coursework with field experience. The integrated curriculum develops analytical, leadership, and policy skills essential for effective practice. Applications are open for the early deadline of December 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu. Inspire change. Shape the future.
This case is a major push by the Trump administration to criminalize protests.
Border Patrol Commander Greg Bovino's rough tactics and alleged racial profiling have led to lawsuits in California and now Chicago.
Forced deployment, pepper balls shot into the face of protesters, shooting from an elevation.
The use of force that I've seen has been exemplary.
I marked a junior student absent. It was because ICE had snatched him up on his way to school.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. So many stories to catch you up on this week, from immigration to Springfield. You know, there was a fall veto session happening. But first, transit.
House lawmakers passed a compromise bill to fund public transportation.
The bill just passed with state lawmakers working overnight on the last day of the fall veto session down in Springfield.
We cannot meet the need that would be created by people missing even a month of SNAP.
Without health care, people will die. They will. And without access to food, more children will go to bed hungry.
This is unprecedented stuff, which is why Democrats, on behalf of the American people, need to respond decisively.
We'll get into the full conversation that you just clicked on in a moment. But first, In the Loop's recap producer, Andrea Guffman, is with me. Hey, Andrea.
Hey, Sasha.
So good to have you in studio for the first time for a little chit-chat.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, you've been doing this. You've been producing our weekly news recap for, what, nearly 5 years?
I know. Can you believe it?
That is insane to think of. The audience loves the recap.
Oh, and I love doing it.
Yeah, I got to tell you.
I love producing it.
Yeah, every time I'm out, that's the first thing people want to tell me is how much they love being able to catch up on the big stories across Chicago and Illinois every week. So tell us, give us a little bit of your secret sauce, Andrea. How do you pick the stories, especially the ones this week?
Right. So, you know, there's a lot of news
yes.
in a city as big as Chicago. But we try to identify things that are impacting our listeners and really put them in context. I mean, we have the reporters that are out in the field. They are the people who are getting all the information, and they come on the recap and really have a conversation mm-hmm. about it. It's more than just giving us the facts, but trying to help us make sense
yeah,
of what's going on
understand.
In our region.
Yeah, and sometimes, Andrea, news, as you said, it's happening and it's happening fast. And on our end, we've got to pivot, right? Didn't we pivot today?
We sure do. Yeah, when we came in today, our plan had been to start with immigration.
Yes.
I mean, that's what's been making a lot of headlines. And it's, you know, what's been happening is shocking to people. And mm-hmm. they want to have us help them make sense of it. But then we got in this morning and we found out that lawmakers in Springfield had been working until 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah, insane.
And they finally passed a transit funding bill,
yes.
which they've been working on for, we've been hearing about this for, you know,
months.
More than 6 months. And so that happened like at 4:30 in the morning. We had to rearrange the whole show.
And that we did.
We did it.
And we'll also touch on top of those topics. We'll talk about Pritzker's appeal to the Department of Homeland Security for a safe Halloween for kids and residents. This is after seeing some tear gassing in Chicago neighborhoods.
And of course, that is a story that this doesn't, I mean, everything we can do on the recap kind of hits home for me because mm-hmm. Chicago is my home. But that story is really my home because I live in Old Irving Park.
Wow.
I was sitting at home last Saturday having my coffee when I heard for the first time the cars coming down the street honking, people blowing their whistles.
Wow.
And it happened at the exact same time that kids were headed to the annual Halloween parade.
Wow.
So that's of course tough when that's going on in your own backyard.
Yeah. So we'll talk more about that. And we'll also touch on SNAP benefits because they're ending tomorrow. This government shutdown's still happening. So we'll talk about the very latest with that. Anything else you're following, Andrea, for next week?
People are going to start getting even more worried than they might already be about the government shutdown because they're going to start seeing their health insurance premiums double.
That's right.
Or, you know, sometimes even more than that, the premiums. So that'll be something we keep an eye on.
Yeah.
The government shutdown and what's going to be happening with the city budget.
Yeah. But who knows, right? Next Friday is a world away at this point.
That is absolutely right.
That's In the Loop producer Andrea Guthman. Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you, Sasha.
At the table to help break down the stories, Christian Farr, reporter for NBC5 Chicago, and Alex Nitkin, government finance and accountability reporter with the Illinois Answers Project at the Better Government Association. And joining us a little later on in the podcast is Jackie Serrato, editor of La Voz, the Spanish language news site of the Chicago Sun-Times. We started with news on that new transit deal. Here's Alex.
It was 4 o'clock this morning, I believe, that they actually passed it.
Were you up waiting?
No.
I hope not.
That's why I'm here and I'm rested and I'm ready to talk about it because I went to sleep and saw like, oh, something might actually be happening. And then I woke up and lo and behold, it really happened, kind of defying all odds and expectations. Honestly, I think a lot of folks thought that they would just, especially because of the higher vote threshold and there had been all these proposals that came out that were so unpopular. And finally, I think that the real breaking point in the end is that the governor finally got involved and really pressured trade unions and the AFL-CIO to really get behind something that would divert money from the billions of dollars every year that Illinois spends on road construction and put it toward transit. That was always the political sort of the obvious solution that was like the political third rail. And so for months and months, we've been seeing negotiators in the Illinois House and Senate come up with these other sort of new or off the wall ideas of are we going to tax unrealized asset gains on billionaires, which is the one that came out earlier this week, or a tax on delivery services across the state, or real estate transfer tax, all of these things that had these really big organized lobbying opposition against them for understandable reasons. Finally, at the very end, the governor sort of started negotiating and put his weight behind something that is more straightforward. So specifically, the bulk of this, and they did come up with that $1.5 billion in new annual revenue, which is the sort of aspirational goal that they researchers came up with that they would need to not only plug the gap, but to really evolve, elevate, integrate, modernize the transit system. The bulk of that $860 million is coming from redirecting revenue that had been coming in from motor fuel taxes that people pay on gas, that's going to go toward transit instead. And to make up for that, there is going to be a hike of about 45 cents on the Illinois Tollway. Those tolls are going to go now sort of replenish that money that went toward road construction.
Yeah, so there did have to be some kind of increase included here.
And
for
I mean,
commuters.
This was always the thing that the really sort of straightforward, conventional, globally accepted practice is you get drivers to pay for transit because these are folks who are opting out of the transit system and people who can afford to drive cars.
Yeah.
And also a really important point that people often miss is that if you're a driver, you want there to be a really high functioning transit system because then there will be fewer cars on the road.
Yeah, let me hear your thoughts here, Christian, because I mean, assuming this gets Pritzker's signature, what do you think this could mean for Chicago area transit riders and drivers too?
Well, I think this is a big deal. I mean, this is, I've been on sort of the outside of this covering this and speaking to commuters who have been, you know, having issues with CTA over the years. But then, of course, all these pandemic dollars wondering when they're going to dry up and then we're going to have this big, huge issue. So there's been a loud cry to solve this problem because it was going to be a major issue. So, you know, hopefully this all works out because, you know, we're still recovering from the pandemic in those days where we were able to drive back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
No issues whatsoever. Everybody's now coming back. And that's when all the construction came back and it's caused a big, you know, clog on the streets. So, you know, hopefully it makes it a little bit easier because, you know, Chicago is one of the most congested cities in the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, Alex, the Illinois House also passed a pretty wide-ranging energy bill. This one critics say could result in higher electricity bills for people like you and me. So what are the details here?
Higher in the short term and hopefully lower in the long term is basically the pitch behind it. This does two really big things. One is that it allows ComEd, Ameren energy companies to basically charge ratepayers, people like you and me, a little bit more to start investing a whole lot in battery storage, which will basically let them really accelerate a lot of that wind and solar and let them sort of jumpstart that modernization to more green energy and help end reliance on fossil fuels. And in the long run, you know, once enough battery storage is created, the idea is that it will actually be more sustainable and bring down costs. But it is another line that you're going to see on your energy bill in the short term. The other really big thing that it does is that it lifts a longstanding moratorium on new nuclear, large nuclear reactors. You may remember, I think it was last year, the legislature passed a really sweeping energy bill that lifted that ban and allowed more nuclear to be built. And
yes.
The governor vetoed it because he had some issues with it. And they sort of, this takes another stab at that. And so it is, advocates and Democrats and the governor have sort of hailed it as this is a step forward for the energy transition. But, you know, we'll see how it, I wouldn't expect relief on bills anytime soon.
Any other notable bills stall or pass during the veto session that we should know?
Well, a couple of them. I mean, there was a immigration, basically, there was a lot of pressure on state lawmakers to do just something to try to insulate, the Chicago region, but also all across the state where we've been seeing these ICE and CBP raids federal raids, attacks, abductions, arrests, whatever you want to call them. And I don't have the details of the bill in front of me, but it was really hotly debated. And I believe it is basically putting some more restrictions on whether federal agents can come within courthouses because of this tactic that we've seen of, you know, federal agents waiting for people.
Waiting in all kinds of places, too, like places that we would have considered sanctuaries at one point.
Yeah, domestic someone violence trying- court. They were there a
yes,
couple of times.
Domestic violence court.
Yeah, exactly. If hospital, someone trying schools. To show up to court and adjudicate whatever their case is with the judge. And so this was an attempt to put some distance with that and some other kind of similar measures.
Right.
But it's really like, what can the state, the city of Chicago is facing the same thing in the county. What can they really do if, you know, you have federal agents at least thinking that they have just immunity to do whatever they want.
So a few out-of-town guests also made it down to Springfield this week. I want to start with a special visit from New York. Why was House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries in Illinois' capital?
He was here to try to get Illinois Democrats to redistrict, to try to see if they can
engineer. Is that discussion still happening?
I mean, you know, after 2021, 2022, the decennial redistricting, it was enough of a headache and we thought we were done with it for 10 years. But then you saw, Texas Republicans move forward with this mid-decade redistricting. And so it has triggered this response from democratically run states, California, and then we saw Virginia is moving forward with it. And so all eyes are turning also on Illinois to see, like, can you draw another map that would, like, force another Democrat? Mm-hmm. The issue is that we already have a pretty gerrymandered state in favor of Democrats. It's 14 Democrats to 3 Republicans. And so it's really, you know, when you come, especially at this late stage in the veto session, when there's all these other things happening and so little time to do it, to come and say, like, hey, can you try to torture these lines a little bit more to get it to be 15-2 instead of 14-3, you can understand why state legislators didn't have a whole lot of appetite for that.
What do you think about Jeffrey's push to bring redistricting here to Illinois?
I think it's, you know, it's like sports. It's a competition, right? You know, you're trying to, you know, you're trying to stay ahead of the game, and, you know, Democrats are, you know, in this sort of, I mean, they're weak right now, you know, Trump has all the control, and then, you know, you see that he's making all these moves and they are attempting to, you know, slow down as much as they possibly can. Of course, we're dealing with the shutdown right now and there's finger pointing with that. And that finger pointing is heavily going towards the Democrats. So, you know, I just think this is something that we're going to see. I mean, we have to see what's going to happen and right next door in Indiana as well. That's where this discussion could be ramping up as well. And it's, of course, happening here in Illinois because of what's going on in Texas. And it was, you know, talked about in California as well. So, you know, it's become a competition, you know, who can get ahead of the game before those midterms come around. Mm.
Several aldermen were also in Springfield, Alex. They were trying to urge lawmakers to help close our city's nearly $1.2 billion budget cap. What were they asking or lobbying for?
You know, a couple of different things that they came up with a lobbying sort of wish list. It's very important to note, though, this is all stuff that is going to be really in the long term and maybe will be included in next year's spring session. This is really not anything that is going to help the city close its current $1.2 billion budget deficit going into 2026. Some of the specific proposals are for the state to raise its corporate tax rate by about 1%, getting the state to put a new tax on digital ads, on cloud computing, sort of a hodgepodge of things. And then also you always have the sort of perennial push to get the state to increase its local government distributive fund, the LGDF, which is a portion of state income tax that goes to localities. I mean, the big questions were around the timing of this, of like, why now, why in the 11th hour of the veto session? The mayor's response is like, why not? There should be no beginning or end to these kinds of lobbying efforts.
And which we should make the folks who were there included Byron Sigcho-Lopez, Walter Red Burnett, Jeanette Taylor, Daniel LaSpada, right?
Yes. So these are folks who a little bit, you know, raising some eyebrows. I mean, these are folks who are like very on the progressive side of things and kind of younger and maybe less experienced, and will be interesting to see what they can accomplish. I mean, they're being led by the mayor's new-ish intergovernmental affairs leader, John Arena, who's a former alderman on the Northwest side, who's a progressive alderman, and, you know, has a lot of connections, also has some, you know, beef with current aldermen. So at least it's sort of like the allegations that have always like dogged this mayor is like, he just doesn't have any lobbying operations in Springfield. He's just not there. And so at least this is sort of a start to try to... His representatives are there. He's trying to really circulate the idea of like, no, the city has an agenda and this is what it is and this is what we're pushing for.
Mayor Brandon Johnson urged state lawmakers to help him save Chicagoans from Trump cuts. And that also includes some 2 million residents in Illinois who could start losing food assistance, known as SNAP, tomorrow. Now, earlier this week on In the Loop, I spoke with a local mom of four, Aubrey Lewandowski, who's a SNAP recipient. And she was notified by text, she told me, that the benefit would be ending soon. Here's Aubrey.
Like, at first, I'm like, is this real? Is this really going to be happening? I mean, we have the holidays coming up. I mean, between Thanksgiving, Christmas, everything. I mean, and even just the everyday things with four kids, I rely on those benefits to help us put food on the table.
Governor Pritzker signed an executive order authorizing $20 million in state funding to support food banks across the state beginning tomorrow. But he is warning, though, that it's not enough. Now, Christian, we're, a little over a month now into this government shutdown. No end in sight at this point. How are federal workers getting by without a paycheck? Well, some have missed two at this point.
Yeah, they have, and they're struggling. And that's just not just here in Illinois. That's, you know, across the country. And recently this week, the union that represents TSA workers They had donations of food and gift cards that they gave to them because they haven't been getting a full paycheck. And this was, I believe, one of the first times that they weren't getting it. This has happened at Miami's International Airport as well, probably other airports across the country where they are gathering food and donations because these workers are still showing up to make certain that, you know, passengers are protected and that things function safely for air travelers. But, you know, one big thing that they did ask for is for people to be patient with these TSA workers because they're not getting their full paychecks and, you know, they're having to take a handout in order to make ends meet at home. So this is a very tough time. So they did this at O'Hare. I believe they did it the next 2 days this week. Yeah. And then 2 days next week, they're going to be doing it at Midway Airport. And, you know, they're hoping not to have to do this and hoping that this shutdown would come to an end. But, you know, there doesn't seem to be an end in sight. And
week five is here.
Week five and you know, what's going to happen next? And so, you know, these people are going to be struggling. And then you got the SNAP benefits on top of that. You know, this is going to be a very tough holiday season for people.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, offering a master's program in social work that combines rigorous coursework with field experience. The integrated curriculum develops analytical, leadership, and policy skills essential for effective practice. Applications are open for the early deadline of December 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Let's bring in another voice here as we pivot to all things immigration. Joining us for her very first time on the Weekly News Recap is Jackie Serrato, editor of La Voz, the Spanish language news site of the Chicago Sun-Times. Jackie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Now, immigration arrests and protests were once again making headlines this week. A lot of the efforts to restrict federal agents or empower them, it's happening in the courts. So I want to start with that. We've been waiting, Jackie, on a decision from the Supreme Court about allowing President Trump to deploy National Guard troops to Illinois. What did we hear from the justices on Wednesday?
So the National Guard troop deployment has been blocked since October 9th by a U.S. District Judge, April Perry.
Yes.
After both Illinois and Chicago sued over the ability or jurisdiction of the president to send out hundreds of troops. In a new order, seeking additional briefing or a hearing on Wednesday, the justices are asking whether the term regular forces, which, you know, refers to whether the National Guard should be deployed in case of an invasion or rebellion, if the president is able to send out regular forces to enforce United States law, federal law, and how that interpretation affects the operation of the law in Chicago and Illinois.
So the Supreme Court is essentially saying we need more information before ruling on this.
Correct, correct. So the deployment of the troops within Illinois will likely remain through mid-November, awaiting for additional information, according to the order on Wednesday.
Yeah. So Illinois will likely remain without National Guard troops being deployed here in our streets. It's on hold through mid-November, at least, for the time being. So the president won't be deploying more National Guard troops in Chicago for now, but do we have any idea when the Supreme Court might rule on this?
I actually have no idea.
It looks like the requests ended, you know, 12 days of sentence. The Trump administration asked the high court on October 17th to undo this. So we'll have to look through the justices have set deadlines for the briefs that last through the 17th of November. So any time around there, essentially. Tuesday, Border Patrol Chief Greg Bovino was also ordered by court. He was supposed to start these daily check-ins with Judge Sarah Ellis. But the next day, by Wednesday, an appeals court had overturned that order. I mean, what exactly was Judge Ellis requesting Bovino to do, Jackie? And so, why did that get tossed?
So initially, the judge was asking Bovino to come in on a daily basis, every afternoon, every business day in the afternoon, to talk about the tactics that Border Patrol is using in Chicago during their Operation Midway Blitz. However, you know, a federal appeals court put a temporary hold on that because it was overly burdensome, and they implied that the district court is micromanaging Bovino and his forces.
Mm. Yeah, the judge ordered Bovino to start wearing a body camera starting today. Is that order also tossed, or are we still moving forward with that?
We're still moving forward with that. He's still expected to wear a body cam, just like the majority of Border Patrol.
Surprised he hadn't been. I mean, did were you aware, Christian? I mean, I just thought that they all, maybe just my silly assumption, I just thought that they would all have to be wearing body cams.
I thought so too.
You're
but
doing
I mean,
some pretty aggressive activity in these streets.
They are, and I've been out there when they've done that aggressive activity, but I have never seen any of them
wearing body cams.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on just how successful the courts have been when it comes to trying to maintain order? Or unsuccessful? What do you think?
I don't know. It's still up in the air because I was down in, what is it, Elwood, where they had all these Texas National Guard troops and I believe Illinois National Guard troops just waiting to be deployed. And I've been on the streets of Chicago when there have been marches and things of that nature. I mean, I was here during NATO. And Chicago police, I have to say, did an amazing job controlling crowds that were, I mean, way bigger than the ones that we're seeing at the Broadview facility or even marching downtown, mm-hmm. much bigger. And they handled it just fine. You know, there was no issue. And I've been out at Broadview when they've had Illinois State Police know how to deal with crowd control. But in many cases, when I've been at Broadview, sometimes you have Trump supporters that are amongst the crowd. There might be some, you know, taunting back and forth, but it's never gotten to the point where people are pushing and shoving or there's some sort of violence that requires federal troops to be there. Police can know how to handle crowd control.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what National Guard troops would do. I just don't see that we have reached that point where we need them.
And so far, we just have to be satisfied with some temporary restraining orders. Right.
Right? And a whole lot of barriers on streets.
Right.
I mean, to get to the Broadview facility is it's a maze. You know, it's amazing what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
The order is also requiring all agents to wear obvious identifiers on their uniforms.
Well, that's right, badge numbers, right,
and so forth. So that is still expected from that order.
Interesting thing that immediately after this was requested by the judge, I mean, we had a reporter on the show earlier this week that said that, you know, they were spotted, just minutes later, just pumping gas at a gas station heading to their next spot. And they had used masking tape and like Sharpies and written numbers on their, you know, they're complying, I guess, right?
Yeah. And Bovino also has to start submitting use of force reports going back to retroactively to early September.
This is In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. If you're just tuning in, we're breaking down the biggest stories of the week with a panel of local journalists that includes Jackie Serrato of La Voz. That's the Spanish language news site of the Chicago Sun-Times, Christian Farr of NBC5, and Alex Nitkin with the Illinois Answers Project. So as immigration raids continue, many families, they're trying their best to help their kids continue with life as usual. I know you covered a story this week, Christian, where kids were trying to do just that, carry on, but under tough circumstances.
Yeah. I got a text message from a baseball coach, social studies teacher, and 16-inch coach at Farragut Career Academy, which is in Little Village. And he just wanted to put a spotlight on this state championship that his team won. And when I went out there, majority of his players are brown skin players. You know, they're Latino community, which is heavily in the Little Village area. Mm-hmm. And they won the state championship battling selective enrollment schools like Elaine Tech or Walter Payton. But that's not the big part of the story. The big part of the story is, as they were playing these games, they would lose players because they were afraid of, you know, federal agents detaining them, their families. They had one player, actually, the whole family picked up and moved to Detroit because they were so fearful of what would happen. And there was a lot of trying to convince them to come to games. And amid all that, they were able to win this state championship. So it's just, it's a story of resilience, and it's just a story of what people have been dealing with since Operation Midway Blitz started. And it's this fear that I think this community is living in, and you know what comes next. And I think you know, it's just a big unknown. And how long does it last? When is it going to end? And I think that's where, you know, a lot of the fear and people packing up and leaving or hiding inside of their homes. You know, it's a scary situation. Yeah. You know, there was a story I think that we did recently this week. I didn't do it, but there's people offering to walk dogs for people. You know, because they can't leave their homes to walk their animals, which should be just this really nice thing to do.
But Chicagoans are stepping up in so many ways. Right. They're walking dogs. They're taking their, you know, they're taking kids to school. They're picking up and dropping off groceries, just anything to help folks be able to stay inside, right, and keep themselves safe. And you talked about a text message there. It reminds me, earlier this week, I got a text from my daughter. She, you know, was at school and heard that they were on lockdown. Right, they were on lockdown because of the presence of immigration enforcement at a park adjacent to the school, and they were there for hours. So she was like, "Oh, I can't go get lunch now," you know, and that was just what they had to do. You know, thinking of this, Alex, high school is already tough for teens. This is just one more thing that you have to deal with or think about: a fear of immigration enforcement. Did you ever imagine something like this?
I truly cannot imagine. It's terrifying. I mean, this is also something that, you know, it's a point that I made when I was on here talking about this a couple of weeks ago, of when you think about all of the checks that can be put on federal agents and these federal actions, you can try to legislate around it, you can try to do these court orders, but ultimately I think the thing that is going to be the most powerful and the most effective is just communities coming together, just people coming out and in these little quiet forms of resistance and solidarity, just making clear that there are more of us than there are of these ICE agents and CBP agents. And if every time, you know, they try to come and make an arrest, people are out blowing whistles, recording, they are the ones who are ultimately keeping folks accountable.
Yeah, I spoke to a panel of folks from Little Village, and, you know, one woman said, you know, it feels like they're just trying to tire us out. They're trying to exhaust us, but they're going to get tired first. Of course, she's referencing the federal agents. Mm-hmm. Jackie, other high school students in the Little Village neighborhood, they staged a walkout this week, right? What happened?
Yeah, there's actually been a couple of high school walkouts from Little Village Lonzo High School, as well as Farragut High School and Kelly High School as well. So these students whose parents and family members are clearly affected by this deportation campaign, they're feeling the effects, the emotional and financial and every other aspect of this situation. So they've, with the support of their teachers and school staff, have walked out of their schools and made statements asking for ICE and Border Patrol to leave their communities. And I mean, Halloween is today, right? There is that fear in the community about whether they should be taking out their kids to ask for candy. And given that Christy Noam has said that, you know, she's not gonna back out, her agents are not gonna back out, people really are scared. So there are plans for people to patrol the neighborhood.
Yeah, and you're referring to the fact that Governor Pritzker was urging Homeland Security Secretary Christy Noam, let kids have a normal Halloween.
Correct.
Right? So tell us more. She's responding basically, no.
Right. She said no, that, you know, she's going to go on as, you know, doing business as usual. But also the U.S. District Judge Sarah Ellis did tell Bovino that she didn't want to hear any complaints about the use of riot control weapons or tear gas on Halloween in front of children. So, you know, the U.S. District Judge is saying one thing, but then we have Christy Noam saying something completely different.
Yeah.
I also just want to shout out the local journalists who are sort of the reason why in that court hearing, Sarah Ellis was challenging Bovino, saying, well, what about this that I read in the media? What about this that I saw on the news? That, you know, from the reporters out there, like from Block Club and La Voz and BEZ, mm-hmm. are actually the ones who are bringing this to the public attention and bring it to the attention of people who make and adjudicate laws and actually bring them in front of you, saying, you can tell me one thing, but I've actually seen from, you know, out in media, we know what's actually happening. And one of those things is,
right.
you know, in a Northwest Side neighborhood in Old Irving Park, some kids having to walk through tear gas for a Halloween parade. I'm like, how do you answer for that?
Yeah.
And something else just to add to the journalist thing is that a lot of my colleagues have been hit by these pepper balls. And I mean, some of ours, too.
Yeah. Our photographers.
Just, yeah. Not struck in front of them. I had a photographer hit in the back of the head. Other wow. stations have had it. Hit on, you know, in their back, and these guys are just doing their job, and that's the sort of the troubling part about all of this. You know, wherever you fall on, you know, on either side of this issue,
mm-hmm.
it's just that we all three have a job to do. We'd like to be able to do it safely, you
right.
know, and not have this fear of being, you know, possibly hit by something or have to walk through tear gas. Because I think we've all been in situations that I think are a bit more hostile than the ones that I've seen. I mean, I can tell you the things that I've been through during other times, and we're not even talking about immigration enforcement,
right.
that,
and
you know,
what,
where I had greater fear. I haven't, you know, gone to the Broadview facility. There are so many police officers. There are so many barriers. And just the people are just having conversations out there.
Yeah, I mean, just even the incident we're referring to in Old Irving Park, that you know, with the tear gas for Halloween. I mean, it went viral. Did anybody see videos of this, mm-hmm. right? Of the arrests that were happening then by federal agents, and that neighborhood it usually welcomes thousands of trick or treaters from across the city every Halloween, and some streets they'll get shut down to allow kids to walk around safely, and things just look a lot different this year because of these ICE raids, and neighbors are now, they're instead on watch. They're setting up patrols to just keep an eye for federal agents.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the PTA at my kid's school. I've been for years, and typically, you know, we're dealing with trying to help teachers out. But this year, it's been filled with, Evanston's got a big budget issue that they're dealing with, and schools might be closed. But then on top of that, in our text thread, we've got people telling us, federal agents are in our neighborhood. Here's a video,
yeah.
you know, and so that's just something that we're all dealing with.
And before we take a pause, Christian, politicians, let's talk about the Broadview ICE facility for another moment here, because politicians and aspiring politicians, too,
yeah.
they're also protesting immigration arrests as well. Some of them were indicted, though, by a grand jury for their protests.
You were talking about Kat earlier, Kat yes. Abogazzoli. I've been out there at that Broadview facility. I wasn't out there on the 26th when all this was supposed to have happened in September, where they were pushing against a black SUV. But now they've been hit with these federal indictments. So federal prosecutors in Chicago, they've got a lot of criticism because they unsealed a grand jury indictment that charges six people, including Kat, who's also running for the congressional seat that Jan Schakowsky has right now. She announced her retirement. But these charges stem from that September 26th incident at that ICE facility. And there's video from them pushing back on that SUV. But it raises, you know, these constitutional concerns that they're targeting Democrats who have opposed the Trump administration going out there. And it's not just Kat. It's Catherine Sharp, who's running for Cook County board seat, also serves as the chief of staff to yep. Alderman Andre Vasquez, the 40th Ward, Brian Straw, an Oak Park trustee,
right.
Michael Rabbit, a 45th Ward Democratic committee person, and Andre Martin, and also Jocelyn Walsh. So this is just raising a lot of questions about, you know, I've seen Mayor Daniel Biss up in Evanston, who's also running for Jan Schakowsky's seat, out there,
yes.
sort of.
He's been part of the mix, too.
Yeah, facing off. And other politicians have been out there. I mean, Dick Durbin has gone out there. Other people have gone out there, you know, just to show their support for, you know, what's going on and push back and to actually get inside of these facilities to see how people are doing, because there have been reports that people feel like they're being treated inhumanely
right.
Inside of that facility as well. I was out there when it was just an office building. You could walk up to the front door. Now it's got
very different now with a big
wooden
fence.
Wood in front of it, concrete barriers. and a lot of activity going in and out.
A jury convicted former Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson of second-degree murder in the killing of Sonia Massey. Grayson faces up to 20 years in prison, but Massey's family, they had hoped for far more. Why don't you just remind us of the events that led up to Massey's killing?
Yeah, Sonia Massey she was in her home. She had called the police, and Sean Grayson and his partner had come to her home because she thought somebody, I believe, was lurking outside of her home. She was concerned. And then there was an odd exchange between Sonia Massey and Sean Grayson. And we see this on the body cam footage of Sean Grayson's partner. So you can clearly see what is going on there. And at some point, she is near a stove with what appears to be a pot of boiling water, says a religious quote to him, and he makes a reference to her that he's going to shoot her when she picks that pot up, and he ends up shooting her in the face, and she dies right there at the scene. And of course, he was charged pretty quickly, and I the family really wanted this to be a first degree murder conviction, but of course it was second degree murder. Sean Grayson testified, said, he was in fear of his life because he thought that she was going to throw that
he pot thought that of, that was a threat.
That was a threat. And so he didn't feel that using a taser, which in many cases police officers use, he didn't feel that it would go through her clothing, I believe is what he testified to. But ultimately the jury was out for a little while and made that decision for second degree murder. I think for the family, I think it's been described sort of as a bittersweet moment. Yes, he is convicted. Yes, he can't be a police officer, but now it's 4 to 20.
For how long?
And how long is he going to be in? And I think Jason Van Dyke, I believe, had the same charge against him. And I believe he got—
Who killed Laquan McDonald.
Laquan McDonald, thank
right,
you.
Right, right.
Six and a half years or something like that. And he did 3, years. What could this end up being? And I think that's where sort of the trouble is for the family. And I think for a lot of people who are sort of advocating for Sonia Massey's family.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about this a little bit more on the back end. I do want to hear from Sonia Massey's father. And this is what he had to say after the verdict.
There's a difference in this country when you have my skin color and Grayson's skin color. We need serious justice, not a miscarriage of justice that happened here in Peoria. We need to make the Sonia Massey law across the whole United States. Yes. Then no family in our country can go through what our family has gone through, because this man should have never had a badge and a gun. This man was kicked out of the service.
That's right.
He was in 6 police departments in 3.5 years. That is shameful. Shameful on Sangamon County for even having a person like that, giving him a gun and a badge.
So the Sonia Massey law that he's referring to strengthens police hiring practices, and it was signed into law by Governor Pritzker in August. But back to what you were saying there, Christian, yes, there was a guilty verdict here, but the family's real concern is about the sentencing. What is that going to be? Because now, with a second-degree charge, it could be, or a second-degree conviction, rather, it could be anywhere from 4 to 20 years, or even probation.
It could be.
He could just get probation.
He could get probation, depending on what the outcome of that is, and which I believe happens on January 29th. And this is not, uncommon in cases like this. I don't think we've seen, somebody go the full 20 or 10,
So there's a huge difference then between first and second degree murder.
Yes.
His first degree would have been 45 to life?
I believe 45 to life. Yes. He, I think people have been saying or quoting, maybe family members, he will have a life after this once he gets out of jail. Of course, he can't be a police officer again, and he, will have to serve that prison time. But I think it's still troubling when you watch that video. It definitely creates a reaction when you see, here's a woman who's definitely in some sort of mental distress. And then, was this officer, did he feel that he was in danger?
Yeah.
According to what he testified on the stand, yes, he felt like he was in danger and that his only course of action was to pull his weapon and to fire. But, it's still troubling. And, when you hear the father, you know, he's saying something that goes along with other stories as well.
I mean, it wasn't just him. Other family members were there for that press conference. And I mean, some didn't want to talk. One was sort of pushing the attorney away. Like, I mean, you all were supposed to do what you were supposed to do. Kind of like you had one job just out of frustration, right?
Yeah.
Anybody think that we're going to see more calls for police reform and accountability in Illinois because of this case?
I think we're focused on immigration right now. You know, I think that's where the big focus, you know, is right now is the attention on, you know, how federal agents are treating, you know, people who live in this country. I don't know, you know, will the focus be shifted back to that? That's a question. I haven't seen it,
yeah.
You know, right now in our newsroom, we are heavily focused on immigration on the Telemundo side and also on the WMAQ side. You know, that is the big thing right now because it just fills a lot of our time.
Now, University of Chicago resident doctors have won their first ever union contract. That follows the recent unionization of resident doctors at Northwestern and the UIC. So congratulations to them. Now, new data on how Illinois schools are doing, what is called the state report card. It came out yesterday. Some mixed grades. I was looking for some good news. Can you fill us in, Christian?
Well it's semi-good news.
It's semi-good.
So they talked about cut scores, which are just basically the proficiency scores. So they changed that. And so it's tough to make a comparison to how we did last year. So the scores are trending upwards. And according to the State Board of Education superintendent, even if they hadn't changed those proficiency rates, we still would have been on an upward trajectory. We're still trying to recover from the pandemic. And even educational advocates, one of them told me the one surprising thing is that the math scores for Illinois school students have gotten better. And she says that's driven by the math scores of Black students that have gotten so much better. They have gone up as well. And even before the pandemic, I know that in Evanston, there was a huge focus on Black minority students doing well in school and making certain that they would be able to achieve in math,
yeah,
and also reading. But there is something that is still a huge focus, which is chronic absenteeism. That's basically kids missing school. And so that still remains a problem. They have not recovered from the pandemic pandemic levels. We haven't gone back to pre-pandemic levels. So that is something which is going to affect your test scores because, hey, if you're not in school and you're not learning, you're not going to test
that's
well.
Right.
And so that's going to be a big issue as well.
Well, we're going to put the report card away and move on to a topic that gets kids excited. Who's ready for Halloween? Alex, you're smiling.
I'm going to be inside watching the World Series.
Yes.
Can I hang out with you? I'm kidding.
Watching my Blue Jays take it all, right?
I'm going to be, you know.
It was a yes or no question, Alex. Just give me
yes. Yeah. No, listen, I'm a big baseball fan. I'm a diehard Mets fan, but my team, you know, fell on their face this year. So I'm definitely rooting for the Blue Jays. You can say that I'm dressed as Alejandro Kirk, but that's because maybe I look like him, the Blue Jays catcher.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I'll take that as a
doppelganger. Yeah. Jackie, Halloween plans? Or are you handing out candy on your doorstep?
I will be handing out candy on my doorstep, but I will also be on high alert.
Yes.
You know, just looking out to see what's happening on the block.
You're doing the
looking
patrols.
Out for other kids as well.
Yeah, yeah. Because Halloween, as we talked about earlier, I mean, it looks different this year for not just Old Irving Park and it's also looking different in largely Latino neighborhoods like Little Village, Brighton Park, Cicero. Community leaders, I'm hearing, they're bringing treats to those who want to stay inside. And they're doing mobile trick-or-treat delivery.
Yes, there are public officials, but also organizations who are doing trunk-or-treat. So where, you know, people find a safe parking lot and people just, you know, distribute candy. Or they will actually deliver the candy to people's homes.
Wow. Sign of the times. What about you, Christian? What are your plans? Are your kids trick-or-treating with you?
Well, I don't know if they'll be with me. I think I might be sitting in a car waiting for them. my 13-year-old is going out with some friends. She's dressed up as a used toilet paper roll.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I don't know.
She want
was
to
a,
see
she
pictures.
She was a bottle of ranch dressing
one year.
I don't
want to see pictures.
Yeah, I don't... I don't want to see pictures, and I have to see it in person.
Send those pictures to talkshows@wbez.org. I want everyone to see those pictures.
And going to a Halloween party as well that's going to start at 4 o'clock, which I really, really like. I love that part. That's great. I love it. But Halloween's not on the top of my list. My wife loves Halloween. She was born in October, so she loves Halloween. She wants to get dressed up. It's never been my biggest
one. My daughter's the big bad wolf.
Okay.
Because her bestie, who's, you know, a redhead, is Little Red Riding Hood. And so they're going to just walk around together. Just be like, get it?
They've
you
got
know
a theme.
What we are?
You
got
to have a theme, right?
Exactly.
I'm not sure what the used toilet paper roll is.
We're still scratching our heads about that one.
Yes.
But again, send those pictures.
I will.
Now, before we go, Chicago has two new bears. They won't be at Soldier Field, though. Their new home is the Lincoln Park Zoo. They came from the zoo in Madison, Wisconsin, and are the first brown bears at Chicago Zoo since 1979. Wow. Well, a warm welcome to Ash and Lexi.
Oh.
That's a long time without any brown bears.
It's a very long time.
Any stories that you're working on next week that we should watch out for, folks? You first, Alex.
I mean, it has gotten drowned out by all this other news, but hey, there's a city budget that is under.
Oh, yes.
We're kind of just wondering what's going to happen. I'm following that pretty closely, looking especially at the federal funding that has dried up and what programs that had been sustained by that funding that now the mayor wants to keep in as part of the budget.
Yeah. It's going to be. Remember all that talk about a corporate head tax?
Oh, the talk is still happening. Believe me.
I bet. But yeah, you're right. It's been drowned out by a lot of other things. So I'm glad you're still on it. We'll focus on it too next week. Jackie, what's on your radar for next week?
Well, I'm going to be continuing to focus on immigration arrests. Today, I'm actually writing about an arrest that took place yesterday at a barbershop on Chicago's Southwest Side. Five plainclothes officers or agents, I'm sorry, went into a barbershop and just dragged out the barber.
Wow.
So there's video footage of that, and that's what I'm going to be working on today.
Christian?
Instead of talking about stories, I do want to talk about our station is about to debut a whole new station, a state-of-the-art facility. So we're going through some very intense training right now.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to be debuting that in January. It's very cool. Our newsroom now looks like a dungeon, so where torture happens.
We'll look out for it.
It's very dark, but now we've got this really bright new newsroom that is coming with some really cool technology.
It.
So we're looking forward to it, just in an age where, you know, our industry is just, you know, struggling just to get by. And so it's nice to see an investment that our main company, Comcast, is putting into it. So we're just waiting to see what it's going to be like.
My thanks to Christian Farr, Jackie Serrato, and Alex Nitkin.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Andrea Guffman, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/InTheLoop. Thanks for listening.